Welcome to In the News, Conversations Around Security, a new and dynamic podcast where we dissect the day's headlines through the critical lens of security risk management and where awareness meets analysis. Join us on the 1st and 15th of each month as we bring you a fresh episode packed with informative debates, expert analysis, and thought-provoking insights offering a nuanced perspective on the stories that shape our world. So buckle up and join us for a look at what's in the news, Conversations Around Security. Hello and welcome to In the News, Conversations in Security or Around Security. It's been a few weeks now, right? So I've already forgotten, Brian.
You already forgotten. You've got the logo right behind you and you still screw it up.
It is Conversations Around Security. And in today's episode, we will be speaking a lot around security and what's in the news, because there's been no shortage of things going on. And we will get into that shortly. It is going to be just an episode between the two of us today. But we are trying to line up some speakers for you to enjoy. But for now, we are going to be talking about the current situation in Gaza, the Iranians, and how things have changed with the latest missile strike on Israel, and what that means ultimately for security and public safety here in the big 614 or 416.
614. Oh, have another drink.
I'm thinking of wrestling. The great Mysterio, Rey Mysterio's finishing move was the 614.
Toronto, so, 905, 647, 416.
We're in the 416. So let's talk about, we're going to get into it. We're going to talk about how those exterior events, the global issues, create a nexus into the local issues that we are ultimately stuck with dealing. And what I mean by we is obviously security people like ourselves, but also the clients and the businesses that we serve and that have to operate in this world. So before I start asking you the first question, Brian, anything you want to say to kick us off? Or are you good?
No, it's nice to be back. It's nice this time. We're doing a little bit differently without a guest. So it's like two old angry guys just sort of spouting off and saying what we think. We'll probably get in trouble for some of our opinions, but so what wouldn't be the first time? Yeah, in terms of guests, we are trying to line up. We've got it's almost booked and signed. We just have to finalize the contract and the dollar amount we've got to pay. But we've got a retired senior leader with CSIS. It's hopefully on our next episode or shortly thereafter, we're going to be talking about interference in Canada.
Elections.
Yeah. Stuff that's happening right now, the inquiry that's happening in Ottawa, and it's worse than most of us realize.
Yeah, I think most Canadians, like our politicians, have their head up their ass, to be honest. So it should be an enlightening conversation with someone who's been on the inside. But for this episode, we're going to focus on all the stuff that's going on the very streets of our city. So like I said, just to bring everybody into on the same page in terms of when we're recording this, because we do record this a week or two ahead. At this point, we've had the continuing war between Hamas and the IDF.
Israel,
As they move into Gaza trying to eliminate Hamas. And in response, now we're seeing some associated activity specifically from Iran and a bunch of their satellite allies, if you want to put it that way. They recently launched a missile attack into Israel. The world has basically said, don't do anything. And so we're just waiting to see what the Netanyahu and the war cabinet actually decide. Are they going to listen to Biden's plea of basically take it on the chin, or are they going to, in classic Israeli style, they've warned you, right?
So they may not listen to Biden, but certainly they're quivering with Canada, because Melanie Joly made a break to Israel to take the win. I love our original deep thinkers in this country.
Take the win.
Take the win. Yeah. All I could say to Melanie and her liberal friends is, why don't you take the wind and buzz off?
Yeah, that's exactly.
Something else.
So on that note, I mean, you brought it right back home, and that's where we want to focus with the episode. What we've seen and what we're going to talk about in this episode is how those external events can transition or affect things here at home. And I can tell you, as part of my day job, my regular job, we're getting increased briefings now and intelligence reports of these protesters basically amping up or looking to amp up their activity. We're starting to see that more recently. We talked about this morning or last night's blockade of a rail, freight rail in
and
Toronto.
Also the goal lines, yeah.
And the goal lines, and pouring cement on the road, or attempting to pour cement on those lines. So I think, you know, in my opinion, they've crossed the line a long time ago.
Well, it's peaceful protesters. They really care about human rights. That's all.
In my opinion, they crossed the line a long time ago. And I think what we're going to get into is how, you know, our inaction, our political pandering and such has emboldened them. And I think that this global nexus, what's going on overseas, is going to impact the situation here at home further. So with that, I'm going to open up to you, you know, initial comments. What are your thoughts on what's been going on?
Well, you know, the emboldening is interesting. You talked about the recent attack, Iran, on Israel, and I know that everyone is worried about escalation. I, too, am worried about escalation. But, you know, the whole strategy of deterrence that has kept us safe all these years since World War II was the fact, and the Israelis actually have it in their doctrine, as did the Americans, you attack Israel, they will retaliate disproportionately. That's what the U.S. have always done, and that's what's kept us from World War III and getting the Soviet Union and China and all the adversaries of the West to take us on. The fact that we are sort of navel gazing right now, and even America is saying, you know, the U.S. is saying, don't do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want a war and I don't want people to die. But the problem is, what is the message we give when we don't do anything? I mean, if you look at the U.S. Since the Obama years, they've been placating Iran ever since then. You know, is it not possible that Iran realized that, you know, when Biden says don't, you know, the line was crossed.
Yeah.
And now he's still saying, well, we're changing the line. Don't cross that one. I mean, at some point, you've got to do something. At some point, you got to put it on the line. And again, I want to be very clear. You know, I've got children that are old enough to serve in the military. Yeah. I mean, I won't go, but they will, and I love them dearly. And I don't want them to have to fight a war, and I don't want anyone's children to have to fight a war. But the fact is, if we think that we're going to be able to maintain our democracy and our freedoms by doing nothing, we got to give your head a shake. This is not just about Israel. Even if you hate Jews and you hate Israel, this is attack on Western freedoms. Yep. And when you know, Israel is only the coal mine in the canary in the coal mine.
Yep.
And if they get taken out, do you think everything's going to be okay? Remember 9/11? Remember all the terrorism nonsense we went through? It wasn't Israel being attacked.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it reminds me of a very famous prime minister who said, you know, peace in our time. Prime Minister Chamberlain, right? 1938, Chamberlain in England, walking back with that paper in his hand saying that Hitler promised him.
Right? Well, yeah, well, Biden has that same piece of paper.
You know, it's just ridiculous. And then we talk about how we don't learn from history. Well, here we are. I mean, I think we're reliving that right now, the way things are going.
Well, we really are. You know, and history repeats itself. You know, part of the problem is young people today, okay, and many of the people you see on campuses are young people. They didn't grow. They grew up in an era where everything was nice. There weren't wars. I mean, they didn't live through the Cold War. They didn't live through the Korean War. They didn't live through the Vietnam War. They didn't see the rise of North Korea. They haven't experienced that, and we don't teach history anymore.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how history is repeating itself. We're making the same mistakes, and we haven't learned anything from it. When you have countries that are violating the law, when they are actually going after everything that's dear to us in the West, and we say, take the win, you know, what is the message? Do you think Iran says, okay, yeah, we're really happy now because America wants to be our friend, you know, Kim Jong-un. Yeah, America wants us to have an economy like theirs and be friends. They're just playing us.
Yeah.
And it is just so upsetting and disconcerting how we're allowing ourselves to be played.
Yeah, we are being played, and we're going to get strangled by our own laws and stupidity. And it's interesting you say bullying, because that brings me to my next question, where you talk about how does the political landscape affect what's going on the street? And when you look at our political landscape, I don't see a friggin' leader anywhere. Maybe Pierre will give him I'm giving him a bye right now because he's not in power and he can't do anything, really, as someone in opposition. But I don't see any political leader, especially the mayor of Toronto, who sits there and cowers in front of these people. They are in real time bullying her on TV. And she turns around and responds with, well, we all have a chance. You know, we're all just have a right to freedom of speech. What does that tell the people of, first of all, the law-abiding citizens of the city and the police who are supposed to be enforcing the law of the city?
It's interesting that all this disruption is on the guise of we want peace and we want the bloodshed to stop, okay? I just got a couple things to say. It's interesting that the violence or the disorder is sort of on one side, yeah, and not the other. I haven't seen a lot of pro-Israel rallies outside of mosques or outside of where these people live, or closing down traffic, or going down and telling Santa Claus at the Eaton Center he shouldn't be there.
Yep.
There seems to be one side under the guise of trying to stop the suffering, the real suffering that's occurring in Gaza. That's why they're out there. Well, I call bullshit on that.
Bullshit.
I got to tell you something. If you listen to the narrative, and they would have you believe that this Israel has been abusing Palestinians in 1948. Let's think about that, okay? Let's assume for a second that's the truth. Well, where the heck are these protesters? Where were they on October 6th and on October 5th? How is it only on October 7th, after the most atrocious terror attack Israel faced since the Holocaust, okay? Only then they concern? That is just so despicable, because I really care about what's happening in Palestine, and I don't like what's happening to people, innocent people on both sides of the fence. But when they go and say that they're really worried about the Palestinians and they only want the Palestinians to have their freedom, they didn't give a rat's ass about Palestinian freedom on October 5th. So you lose all credibility with me. And quite honestly, you're doing this peacefully, and you have demonstrators that are dressed up suicide vests to look like a suicide vest.
Yeah.
Confronted. It's not a suicide vest. It's a fishing vest. Come on. I mean, I understand if you got a problem with Israel. But why do you have a problem with Toronto?
Yeah.
Why are you going after Santa Claus? Why are you slowing people down so they can't go on the GO train, or they can't, traffic is disrupted? Gridlock is bad enough in Toronto due to construction and our own making. Like, what is this all about?
Yeah, it's more than just the Gaza excuse. That's all it is. Sure. It's an excuse for them to justify what they're doing. And it is an attack on the West, Western values, Western democracy. They're being financed, as we know, or we've heard through the news, by Iran and their associated, terror groups that are out there. Their interest isn't to protect the children and bring back the hostages. No. They're there to disrupt our society. And it's time that Canadians wake the hell up and start taking action. And that starts with the police. I'm going to go to our third question.
Hold on before you go to the third question. I just want to talk about that. We both lived through the G20. We were part of the planning process, worked very closely to secure the financial district. And the interesting thing with the G20, and I see it happening again, okay, there's no doubt in my mind that there are a cadre of protesters right now that are sincere. They may not be properly informed. Maybe they are. I don't know. But they really are out there for the right reason. But the movement has been hijacked, just like in the G20. You had legitimate protesters, and it became a black bloc shit show. That's what's happening right now. And if they don't get their shit together and start organizing properly and controlling the message, okay, they're going to lose any support they had. This is crazy. This isn't helping the cause. Do they think that we're going to come around and say, we want to help? We do want to help. We do want peace in the Middle East for everyone, okay? Yeah. But this isn't getting the desired effect.
This isn't the way, as the as the Star Wars scene goes.
It's not the way.
So let's go to the police, because they've been at the pointy end of the stick. They've been getting a lot of negative press. They've done a lot of stupid things. They've done a lot of questionable things. Where's the chief recently? Like, is he still in the country? I haven't heard him say anything in the last few weeks, right? Like, that should be, he needs to be a chief and not a politician at this point. This is the law. We need to start sending the messaging to the protesters that as long as you abide by this set of rules, you're good to go. But once you cross it, start chucking them in a paddy wagon and off to the jail they go. Like, we need to start drawing that line.
I said this since day one, when the police appeared to be conflicted, when the politicians were conflicted. I understand the politicians are conflicted because most of them are idiots. But in terms of the police, it was really, really simple. Just enforce the law. Whoever breaks the law, no matter what side, just enforce the law. But no, we didn't do that. And the things escalated. And what's, and I'm really happy that the Toronto police and police services are starting to crack down, okay? And it's not because they're taking sides, it's because the law is being broken. But it's unfortunate it took assaults on police officers,
Threats.
The police horses, to get their attention, and not the assaults on civilians and individuals that were either intimidated or felt threatened on both sides.
Yeah.
I mean, so I'm glad we're moving in the right direction now. It's just upsetting to me. It's taken so long. And again, Brian's doctrine is with protest management, you know, you don't want to take sides. No one's asking you to take sides. Enforce the law.
Well, I'm going to throw a curveball at you now because I didn't talk about this question before, but now that we've been talking, it just comes into my head like a light bulb. Sometimes I get those, it turns on and the gears spin up and away we go. But when I think about the position that the police have been put in, and now they're moving in the right direction, if they're starting to enforce things. And I go back to your comment earlier about the fishing vest, right? And people are going to discount like that, will discount that, certainly in the public saying, it's just a fishing vest. Like, how can you get that wrong? Which is bullshit, first of all. They've never been in that situation to be able to make that comment. You know, I've been in those situations. I mean, you've been in those situations where a guy throws his hand out. You don't know if it's a gun or if it's a wallet. And you make a call based on seconds. But my point is, to me, that could probably very likely be a test in terms of how is the police going to respond. And when you look at what's going on around the world, in you know, you pointed to the fact that it's organized globally. It's not a local freaking incident. Look at what's gone on around the world in the last week in particular with stabbing attacks, all back to the Muslim Islamophobic type of, you know, position or stance. Talk about the preacher in Australia.
Australia, yeah.
At the mall, right? And those are all people associated with this movement, right? And in Canada, we're not getting that. I don't believe that. I call bullshit on that. I think it's just a matter of time before we see something similar. And I hope to God it's not a freaking real suicide vest, but think about the fact that we've let in 1.5 million refugees and migrants into this country in 1 year. Do you think, you know, we had our talk with Phil, how many of them have been actually vetted? How many of them have been actually background checked? You're telling me that even if it's 10%, 5% of those people are disassociated. They come here with a dream that doesn't exist, as we know, with all the economy and affordability. You've got a 20-something-year-old male in this country today, disassociated, disaffectionate, and all of a sudden he's not going to grasp onto something like that and say, hey, I'm going to take a chance at immortality as well. That's what scares me.
The 1 million people we took in, I think Bill Maher did a thing on Canada the other day.
Yeah.
And the 1 million people translates to over, like, if you look at the U.S., over 15 million.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's put that perspective, okay? The U.S. are going crazy, and they have real concerns right now about their southern border and the fact that people are coming in, they're not documented. I heard something that was really concerning that I think there were, like, I think they said 10 million. Maybe I'm getting it wrong, but the ratio is going to be right. People came in undocumented through the southern border. They were captured. They were processed, but 2 million of them have disappeared. So think about that. 9/11, there were 6 or 7 hijackers or 8 hijackers. Uh-huh. We got 2 million people that are floating around in the U.S. and God knows how many here in Canada. Okay, so we got to get our stuff together because you're right, the fishing vest, okay? It was smoke grenades, as it turned out. Okay? The point is, it was there to intimidate. The fact that they said it was a fishing vest is ridiculous, okay? It just shows that they've lost control of this movement, and it's no longer a pro-Palestinian movement. You ask anyone in the intelligence community, in the security community, in law enforcement, this is a pro-Hamas community because you do not protect vulnerable people by doing the antics they're doing. Yeah. It's counter. What they're doing is just like Iran did to Israel. They're pushing to see what they can get away with.
Yeah.
You talk about the fishing vest and what the police are going to do. And then they're going to do something and we're going to have a problem. I mean, you have the FBI director right now. And if, you know, we weren't so politically correct in Canada, I'm sure our CSIS or RCMP people would say that. They say that it's inevitable that there's going to be a terror attack. The likelihood is very high. And I was listening to a podcast, one of our competitors, Spies Like Us, our friend Phil Gursky, and Al Prednack, and Neil Bissom, and former CSIS guys. And they were saying that, quite honestly, I mean, the situation in Canada is probably not that far different. Okay, there are threats to this country. We don't have an intelligence culture. We don't have a public safety culture. We don't have a security culture. We're asleep. Lambs to the slaughter. I'm going to tell you it's going to be just like 9/11.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it will be 9/11. But we're asleep and we're naive. Something bad's going to happen. Then we're going to say, oh my God, we got to do something. It's inevitable something's going to happen.
Yep. And then all, just like 9/11, all hell will break loose. All the money will come forward and there'll be knee-jerk reactions and overreactions and stuff that all could have been prevented with some common sense, proactive strategies now, right? Like to address these things today.
And you know, I think maybe we got to tie it down. You know, I've just been pontificating as of you and, you know, saying what I feel. But there really is concerns that we have to get our hands around in terms of securing Toronto, keeping Torontonians safe. I mean, we're both in the security business, okay? I, a security consultant, I deal with a lot of large commercial real estate companies, venue operators, shopping malls. There are real things that come out of this that are going to affect how organizations in Toronto and Canada are operating. Don't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And right now, like you say, we're sort of flying blind and we're naive. And I go back to, there's no leader that's willing to say this needs to be taken seriously. They're all too busy pandering for votes and dividing the country rather than bringing us together, figuring out how we're going to create a safer Canada for everybody. Which, you know, going back to exactly what you just said, what are some of the things they could be doing, should be doing? I don't want to just bitch and complain like everybody else, but you know, in my small role, your small role, we got loud mouths. And
I got a big role because I got a big practice, but you got a small role.
This is as big as we're going to get, I think, unless somebody latches onto us and gives us power. But, you know, in my opinion, I think it starts with, first of all, the politicians. They need to support the police. The police are the experts in public safety, and they need to give them they have the authority. You just have to give them the support, like let them know they're doing the right thing as opposed to lambasting them in public and telling them that they're not, you know, you got to be less aggressive. There's a guy with a friggin' knife or making a threat. What's less aggressive? It's time to draw a line. And I think that the police have to start making that line firmer, as firm as it can be. Once you cross it over, I don't care how minor, sort of like New York in the 70s and 80s, right? People would spit, jaywalk, and then along came Giuliani when he was sane. and brought in hard policing, man. You spit on the street, you're getting a ticket. Broken window theory.
Yeah,
and that's probably what we need to get back to reestablish some sense of ownership and accountability and restore public safety in this freaking city.
Well, I agree. It's simple things. I mean, Toronto police have been through a terrible couple of week period with officers. I think three or four that have been assaulted, okay, and lucky to be alive. And what is the, what is the support that they get from the city of Toronto, from the mayor? I mean, she's tweeted, but she can't say the words that I support the work done by our police officers. Yep. I got to tell you something, coming from police background, police family, my wife's a police officer, my nephew's a police officer, you're a police officer, or we're a police officer till they fired you for that mistake you made, but, you know, stuff happens.
There's only one shot.
But the thing is, we're dealing with humans. I mean, these are decent people, and you can't spit on people or not support people and think they're going to be able to continue to do the job the way we need to do the job. We've got to support the intelligence community, the military. We've got to support the police. We've got to do that. We've got to hold our politicians accountable. And then we've got to make sure that our business leaders wake up. This notion that Canada is a lovey-dovey country and everyone loves us, okay, we got to grow up. This is the real world. And the Canada we have become is not the Canada we were. And that's thanks to our political leaders.
Yep.
And we as business leaders have to realize that we have a fiduciary, we have a duty of care obligation to make sure that the people in our buildings, the people in our organizations, the assets that we're responsible for are safe. The idea that, you know what, I'm going to make sure that Olivia Chow takes care of me and I'll call 911, they'll take care of me. We're in this together. You know, and unless we all do our part, it's going to disrupt day-to-day operations.
Yeah, it'll deteriorate and becomes the Wild West. And ultimately, that drives up business and the money dries up and the city dies. And that's the end of it. So, you know,
in some respects, since COVID, and you know, I don't know that this is any politician's fault, but downtown Toronto isn't the downtown Toronto was. And I remember going to work downtown, and at the GO train station, I could never get a parking spot no matter when I went. The GO train station that I use is 60% empty.
Yeah,
every day.
Yeah.
So you know, that's got to be hurting the city and the fabric of the city. So you've got all these natural stressors that are there caused by COVID and the environment. Then you got these human-induced stressors. This is not good for the healthy operation of any community.
Absolutely. I think we're going to leave it there because I think that's a good summary. I'll give you the credit and...
Excuse me. Oh, sorry. I didn't hear that. Did you say something?
Turn up your hearing aid.
Yeah, okay.
But I think that was a good discussion. I hope our listeners at least enjoyed it if they don't take anything from it. But, in closing, I think we're in a dark spot. And we only talked about the public safety aspect, let alone, you know, what our idiot in Ottawa is doing and the budget and all that kind of stuff. I mean, we're in a world of hurt ahead of us. I think it's going to get a lot worse before we see some daylight. And the only way we're going to get through it is for people to become more involved, to become more engaged. Don't assume the police know something. If you see something, say something. It's an overused term, but people need to step up and own their own security. Otherwise, it becomes the Wild West. You start getting afraid to say something, and that makes the bad guys win. And I saw one article this morning that I read on my Twitter feed where the guy said it bang on. He says, we got to make the bad guys fear the good guys again. And he didn't mean good guys as in police. He mean victims. They need to fear victimizing people. And that's where we got to get to. If you touch somebody, you're going to jail. If you touch somebody, you're going to get punished. That's what we need to get back to.
There was a report recently, I don't know if it's the RCMP or CSIS, that talked about with what's happening societally in Canada, you know, everything back to the trucker convoy, to all the nonsense right now, that they're concerned that all the seedlings are there for people to take matters in their own hand. If the state won't protect us, okay, people are going to take it into their own hand, and that's not a good place to be.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a whole other Pandora's box. You see it in the States, especially with the far right wing, you know, the Proud Boys and people like that. And we've got a lot of that same stuff simmering just below the surface here in Canada. So, you know, our leaders, you know, federally, provincially, municipally, our police leaders, we got to take this seriously, because there's a lot more at stake than just saying, well, you know, they just want to blow off some steam. There's a bigger picture. It's got to be looked at in a context.
Yeah, and maybe that, you know, we had an RCMP report speak to RCMP, that festering anger, that it's a lot more serious than I think we the politicians certainly want to give it, you know, credit for, which I think, to your point, is dangerous. But maybe that'll be our next podcast, because we're out of time on this one. So thanks for the discussion. I think we got to hook up for a bourbon or a breakfast at some point, because I haven't met with you in quite a while, but I look forward to that. And to the listeners, if you like what you're hearing, please hit subscribe or like us on the YouTube channel, because it helps us understand whether or not you like our content and what directions to go. And leave us a comment if you've got something in mind in terms of what we could talk about.
Other than that,
I'm signing off.
Over to you. And I agree with Luke. You know, we really are driven this time with this new podcast format that we want to bring informative content to our listeners. We're going to bring some really interesting guests. So if there's anything that you're interested in, that you think you'd like us to talk about, either drop us a message on LinkedIn, or you can go to my website, brianclayman.com, and go to the podcast section, and there's a comment section there. We really would appreciate that, because we want to bring content that's interesting and engaging. So thanks, Luke. Thanks, everyone. It was great. I enjoyed today.
Until next time.
Take care, everyone.